So my first slide is actually some sort of summing up of what's the state of affairs and also the context of my talk. This is actually in 6 points, the actual recent situation about multilingualism in named languages and the named formal policy on multilingualism. So these Brussels and national leaders have already, and at the start of the European Union, decided that all standard languages in EU are equal, which is very important for our idea of what multilingualism is all about. Standard languages are equal. That's one thing. So I will talk about where do you find receptive multilingualism, what kind of concepts, and I won't go into depth, but I know, want to show you that the tradition of research has a long time started again. I will show you some applications of where receptive multilingualism is being used and on the policy level in the curriculum. And then I'll end up with my conclusion, how to integrate the concept of receptive multilingualism in a more overarching concept of inclusive multilingualism, and translanguaging should be mentioned as well at that spot, because there are a lot of interconnections between the two concepts, as we will see while we are talking. So where do you find receptive multilingualism? So you have the border regions, so in the Dutch-German, but also the between Portugal and Spain, in Slovaks and Serbs. So you have all these border regions where people in Luxembourg, so you have all these where people work and have families that are multilingual. You have in governmental communication in Brussels, people with high proficiencies work together and they talk next to each other in small talk, but also in meetings, they have this kind of receptive multilingualism. On the television, on blogs, on emails. I write lots of emails in Dutch and I get an answer in English and I write back in Dutch or in German. So this kind of also written kind of receptive multilingualism is also at stake. And you have, as a, in Scandinavia, you have a lot of receptive multilingualism between the Scandinavian languages, and you have all these detectives and series of Borgen and other. And then you see also in the films the Swedish and the Danish next to each other. So this is how people understand each other, and it is also on film. So it's not very special. Bilingual families, you have, as from your education, you have learned OPAL, one parent, one language. That's one principle that's being should be used in multilingual families. When you use this principle in your family, actually receptive multilingualism is at stake, because one parent talks one language and the other parent is listening, then you have this receptive mode. Migrants cannot speak the national language immediately, but understand it. So also in official or in the bureaucracy settings, there is this kind of receptive mode. And in educational settings, I will show you how we use receptive multilingualism also in Utrecht University as a mode for multilingual teaching at academic level. It occurs in many languages. So about language families, and there is, I don't have all the citations, but you have in many languages, you have these kind of language families, you have this kind of receptive mode. So to start with a definition, people employ a language or a language variety that differs from their partners. So you're talking different languages. You understand each other without the help of a lingua franca, without English or German or whatsoever. And that works because people activate this kind of receptive knowledge of the other language. So I won't go into depth, but to give you some, and it more or less follows your idea of starting with basic concepts. Here you have a list of all kinds of concepts. The research on this phenomena started already in Scandinavia in the 15th of last century with Hagen, he called it semi-communication, and I won't list them all, but you see there has been a lot of research. Just to mention here, plurilingualism, the Common European Framework uses this notion. Actually, when you read the text in the beginning, the background, they really talk about people using different languages. The second part is the list with all the qualifications, A1, A2, B1, B2. Then they switch to named standard languages. So there is a contradiction in the concept itself. But in the beginning, they have recognized this kind of receptive mode that is at stake in Europe. Also, the intercomprehension, maybe you have heard it somehow. There is also intercomprehension, is especially in the Roman sphere, and it's also have to reading capacities. You can read, you have courses, intercomprehension, reading in other language, and only reading, so it focuses on the passive reading competencies. So my interest is more in the oral, but therefore these concepts are interesting to mention them and to give also a short idea of how the theoretical scheme behind is structured. Because in linguistics you had Chomsky, he was really strict structural linguist, making a big division between competence and performance. Competence was in your head, performance what you do, and he only focused on what's in your head. And then as a reaction you had a pragmatic switch in which Himes, who was in the social linguistic pragmatic scene very important, he developed actually a new in which he said you should look at what people actually do when they speak. So he sets a new scene, and when you look to these different concepts of receptive motor language, you see the reflection of this theoretical change that has been over the last 15 years. So, and these concepts has a little bit of different interest in what they research when they look at receptive multilingualism. Actually, the more formal oriented concept look at the understandability of these of two languages next to each other, and they look at how the language is structured and whether the structure is make this understanding possible. And the more functional concept look actually at how many times did you hear another language, how is your proficiency, how is the your attitude, and these more social strategies that are behind understanding. Both are important, but when you look at these concepts, then the one on top are more formal oriented, and the more at the back are more functional oriented. Just to give you the theoretical background. Then you have, we had already mentioned the concept and the language families. There is also a differentiation in how these concepts relate to language families. Here you have a map of Europe, and you see the Germanic languages in red, the Romance language in green, Slavic language in blue. And so the idea is that languages within the green domain, people understand each better, and in the red domain and in the blue domain. So these concepts focus on the how these languages work within a family, within a language family, and other concepts also look at how, whether it is possible to understand someone speaking French and German belonging to different languages. So here we have again the mutual intelligibility and semi-communication, receptive multilingualism in the concept of Braunmüller. Only look at the what is called the inherent. That means that you can understand it because languages are more or less the same, belong to the same family. And the other concept, starting with receptive multilingualism in the meaning of Birkens, up to lingua receptiva, are more interested in how you can understand someone talking to another language that is not part of your own language family. So you have to learn something, so that this means acquired understanding. So on the terminology, In my research, I used both notions, perceptive multilingualism. So that is actually the phenomenon in which people use different language and understand each other. And we invented a new notion, lingua receptiva, which is all some resemblance to lingua franca. And lingua franca is the language that you use that is not the mother tongue of one of the participants. Lingua receptiva is the idea, the competences that you need to make use of several different languages and understand each other. So the first is the phenomena, the lingua receptiva is the mechanisms and the competence that make this all possible. Okay, applications. So I just choose three domains in which the application of receptive multilingualism is at stake. And we go back to Brussels again. Brussels want to promote multilingualism. So they made a skill agenda. Maybe you have talked about it in and heard about it in your education. So they want to make people aware of learning languages, not only in school, but also outside school. So this kind of informal learning is also very important. So making these skills more visible on the workplace, in outside formal education, and for instance, also appropriate training for new arrived migrants. So people have to be aware that you have all different kind of modes to learn other languages. To conclude, receptive multilingualism is not the solution for all the problems. So you should really be aware of the limitations. That means that actually this kind of concept should be integrated in what we have called an inclusive multilingualism concept, in which you actually try to establish a competence in which people can use their English, can use what we have called regional lingua franca. For instance, German is a regional lingua franca in Poland and Eastern Europe, where lots of people previously were understanding German. So this is a lingua franca that is not English, but another lingua franca. You should be able to use code switching. And you, when you don't understand anything, you should be able to start Googling and make use of Google Translate, or just by telephone ask a professional interpreter. So this competence to cope with multilingualism, and that there is no one solution, but there are many solutions, and that you have to cope with these modes and know whether they are profitable and which whether they are not profitable, that is, I think, a lesson that I would love to give you as teachers for future students, that people, students and children live in a multilingual world. And they learn the language, the national language, but they have to cope with multilingual situations. And as translanguaging is part of the educational system, they should also be prepared to cope with this multilingual situation when they left the school, because this is lifelong learning, and lifelong learning has to cope with multilingual situations. So the quintessence of receptive multilingualism and lingua receptiva is to be aware of their restrictions in order to know their potential. Thank you for your